Welcome to I Think Therefore iPod, a podcast covering all things Apple and beyond. March 7th, 2006. Hi everybody, and welcome to the show. Well, I finally got this podcast working. So the first thing I'd like to talk about today is just how I managed to do that. I thought it would be very difficult to get this podcast up and running, and granted it wasn't one of the easiest things I've ever done in my life, but the process itself was relatively straightforward when it came down to actually doing it. The first step was to get an RSS feed working on my website, ithinkthereforeipod.blogspot.com. So to do this, I went on to Feedburner and I created an account. I gave them my URL, and they created the RSS feed for me. It's a very good service for creating an RSS feed, and all I had to ensure was that the podcasting functions were enabled. The next step was to actually record the first podcast, and that wasn't very difficult. I just opened GarageBand, created a couple of tracks, and recorded directly into it. GarageBand made the whole process very simple. It was really easy to record and edit my audio, and do things like control when my music would fade out. Once my audio was recorded, edited, and mixed, all I had to do was export it to iTunes and convert the file to an MP3. The next step was to actually get the finished podcast file online, and to do this, I uploaded it to an online archive using a tool called CC Publisher. Once it was online, what I had to do was create a link to the file in one of my posts, and that would show up in my RSS feed. Once that was done, you could listen to the podcast's audio file by going onto my website and clicking on the link. But for this audio link to actually become a podcast, what I had to do was make sure that something called a podcast enclosure was created on my RSS feed. What this means is that every time I make a link to an audio file in one of my posts, my RSS feed will pick it up and create a special enclosure for it. And this will show up every time the feed is updated with a link to an audio file. The great thing is that Feedburner will create these podcast enclosures for you if you enable it in the settings. So once this was done, I just had to verify my RSS feed to make sure it was working and that the podcast enclosures were being created properly. And once everything's up and running, anyone can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes. And what iTunes does is it subscribes to your RSS feed and it checks for podcast enclosures. And every time it finds these, it downloads them into iTunes for you. So that's pretty neat. Now at the moment, if you want to subscribe to my podcast, you have to do it manually by going into iTunes, clicking on the advanced menu, and selecting subscribe to podcast. And then all you have to do is paste the URL of my feed into the box that pops up. The reason you have to do this manually right now is because I'm not listed on iTunes yet. But that's not a very difficult thing to do. All I have to do is activate my Apple account as an iTunes account, and once I can sign into iTunes, then I can submit this podcast. And once that's done, well, I'll be on iTunes and you'll be able to search for me like you would any other podcast that's listed there. So that's basically how this podcast came to be. And of course, you can find links to some of the utilities and services I've mentioned, as well as more details on my website. Now, one thing I'm trying to come up with is some artwork that will be the image file for this podcast. And if any of you out there want to help me out with this, I'd be more than happy to take a look at submissions. If you want to help me out, send an image file to my email address, which is ithinkthereforeipodcast@gmail.com. I'm also thinking of enhancing this podcast by creating chapters and having a different image file for each chapter. And if I can get that done, that might be pretty cool. Now, GarageBand 3 lets you do this really easily from within the application. But until I get iLife 06, I'm still going to be using GarageBand 2. But thankfully, Apple provides this nifty little tool called the Podcast Chapter Tool that lets you enhance podcasts. So I might wait until I get iLife 06 before I start enhancing this podcast, or I might give this little tool a try. So, enough about podcasts. The last thing I want to talk about today is security. As some of you may be aware of, a couple of questions have been raised recently regarding Mac OS X's security. The most recent of these is a claim that was published on ZDNet Australia, where a Swedish hacker claimed to have hacked into OS X in 30 minutes. He didn't provide any details about which particular security vulnerabilities he exploited or how exactly he did it, but basically it was a challenge and he succeeded in breaching the Mac. But the story has since developed a bit, and it turns out that the website that posted this, ZDNet Australia, failed to mention one very, very important point. This hacker was apparently granted SSH access, which is secure shell access. So he didn't just remotely hack into the system. Now, I'm not an expert on secure shell access, but I did a little bit of reading up on it, and from what I understand, what it does is it essentially grants you access to the computer, as if you were a local user with a local account. Now, this gives you a very different degree of access to the computer that, say, a remote hacker on a separate network would have. And the fact of the matter is that most consumer systems won't allow secure shell access to other users. In fact, most consumer systems won't even have the necessary ports open to allow secure shell access like this system did. So in response to this, the University of Wisconsin posted a new challenge, a link to which you can find on my website. And the challenge is simply to alter the website on which the challenge can be found. And the person who created this site sounds very, very confident that his security won't be breached. So let's see if anyone actually manages to breach this Mac Mini on which he's hosting this website, in which case there may be a genuine vulnerability in OS X that needs to be addressed. But remember, this challenge is not granting remote hackers secure shell access, as was the case with the previous claim to have breached OS X in 30 minutes. But nevertheless, some people are still asking, are our Mac systems still safe? So let's put this all into perspective. Over the last couple of weeks, we've had three Mac OS X security issues. Everyone's been going crazy over them, they've been making the headlines, and they've been turned into a huge issue. But I would argue that they're really not a big issue. Let's take a look at each one of these security issues individually. First, we have the LeapA malware, which disguised itself as an archive of JPEG files that claimed to have images of the upcoming Leopard operating system. Tempting for any Mac user, I know. But this malware didn't actually actively infect your system. First of all, it relied on social engineering. These fake images were posted on a website and people had to download them. On top of that, after you downloaded this unknown file, you had to unzip it and run it, at which point you should have realized that these aren't actually JPEGs. But even so, anytime an application tries to access some of your secure settings, it asks for your administrative password, and this LeapA malware was no different. So not only did you have to be stupid enough to download it, unzip it, and run it, you also had to be dumb enough to give these JPEG files your administrative password. The point I'm trying to make is that the majority of people who got infected by this did so deliberately to see what it would do to their systems. And if you actually managed to get infected by something like this, you really asked for it. And this piece of malware's feeble attempt to reproduce itself consisted of it spreading over Bonjour networks, i.e. local networks, over iChat. Pretty feeble compared to some of the PC viruses we see out there. Now the second security issue we saw was with Safari, where somebody basically told us that if you enable the open safe file setting in the preferences, that this opens a hole that could be exploited. And yes, this was seen as a security vulnerability, but first of all, it was very easy to prevent. You just have to uncheck the box that says open safe files after downloading. And second of all, Apple patched it quickly enough. So that issue is really no longer on the table. The third issue was this 30-minute hack that I mentioned already, and how the person who claimed to have hacked the OS X system in 30 minutes failed to mention that he had secure shell access. So where have we gotten up to? Well, we've had three security issues raised with regards to OS X in the last couple of weeks, and none of them are particularly dangerous or risky. So let's compare this to the PC world, where they have hundreds of thousands of worms, trojans, viruses, and spyware flying around just waiting to infect your Windows system. I would say that our Mac systems are still pretty safe, and that our systems are still as beautiful as they ever were. Now, I'm not saying that this won't change, and it's always good to remain vigilant, but the fact of the matter is that OS X is a fundamentally more secure system than Windows is. And let's face it, it's a superior operating system as well. So whilst these recent issues do raise certain questions, and they remind us to always be vigilant, really, at the end of the day, our systems are still very safe, and there's very little for us to worry about. As long as we're sensible and intelligent about how we use our computers and we remain vigilant, it doesn't look like the Macintosh will be facing any of the security issues that plague PCs on a daily basis anytime soon. So that just about does it for today's episode. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to visit my website at ithinkthereforeipod.blogspot.com. See you next time!